Is there a heaven for a gangster? Gangster, gangster.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 12 days into the month of May. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, we have Episode 9 of the Disability is Art podcast. All that and more, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you would like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca.
Quebec, vaccination against COVID-19 is underway, but not everybody is protected yet. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still need to respect basic health measures, like wearing a mask, maintaining social distancing, and washing your hands regularly. You must also get tested if you have symptoms and follow self-isolation guidelines. Find out about the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Follow all the health guidelines, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. Up now is Episode 9 of the Disability is Art podcast. This episode is titled, People with Disability Have Sex. Surprise. That's up now.
Okay. Welcome to the Disability is Art podcast, a podcast about art and disability here in Chibooktook, Halifax, Nova Scotia. I am your host, Kelsey McDonald, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Emma Mader and Truly Love. And today our guest is April Hubbard. Hi, April.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Welcome back. If you didn't get a chance, audience who's listening, to hear our first interview with April Hubbard, you can go back. It was last episode and rewatch that to get all the details about who April is. Today we're going to be having a really interesting conversation, a really important conversation, and maybe even a little bit of a spicy conversation. So we are going to be talking about, as Emma once said in a previous episode, they're talking about sex. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So April, thanks for being with us again. And thanks for bringing this incredibly interesting topic to us to discuss today. So we're really looking forward to it.
Thanks so much for having me. I'll start maybe by giving a visual description of myself. So I am a light-skinned white woman with shoulder-length brown hair. I have light tortoiseshell glasses, a long angular face. I am wearing a burgundy shirt with little pink polka dots on it. There's a white background behind me with a white and purple flower over my shoulder.
All right, and I'll go next. So this is Kelsey speaking, and I am a light-skinned white woman with brown hair pulled back. I have a yellow headband on. I'm wearing earrings that are in the shape of a heart. I'm wearing a red shirt that has little flower designs on it. And I am in a space with a white background with a black curtain. And I'll pass to Emma.
Okay, my name's Emma Mather, and I am a light-skinned white woman with brown, frizzy, shoulder-length hair. I'm wearing a black jumper thing. And I'm in a room with a maroon background and a white background and a purple chair. And I have tattoos. And pass to Truly.
This is Truly speaking. I am a very light-skinned white woman with peachy pink hair that is currently in pigtails, and I have bangs. I have face piercings on my nose and a pair of little beaded blue and white earrings. I have bright blue lipstick on and a white and blue polka dotted shirt. And I'm in my bedroom, which is brown and white with some of my art in the corner.
Beautiful. So that is something that April shared with us in her last interview with us, which is a visual description of what we look like for folks that are deaf or hard of hearing. No, not that. who are visually impaired. The other
who are blind or low vision. Yes.
Who are blind or low vision. And so we're grateful for April for sharing that with us. And it's hopefully something that we will continue doing. So, and it is kind of fun just to take a minute to really like absorb everyone and what they look like and sort of celebrate our uniqueness, which is also really cool too. So I'm really excited about that. And also am obsessed with Truly's blue lips. So I was like, make sure you say you have blue lipstick on today.
Okay, great.
I find you get to learn a lot about people's personalities too, based on what they describe themselves. And yeah, it's just kind of the energy and air they bring to it. So it can be a fun way to start a meeting.
Yeah, it is really interesting and fun. So I'm really glad that we did that today. And we did it at the start of the episode, because last time we did it at the end of the episode. So, so thank you everyone for joining us. And now if you're our listening audience, I've never seen the video that we record for this podcast, now you have a sense of what we all look like too, which is also very cool. So like I mentioned at the top of the episode today, we are going to be talking about sex. April has a very interesting project that she is a part of. And that particular project is about sex and disability. So April, I'm going to pass it off to you and get you to explain exactly what it is that you're doing and who you're working with and why it's so important.
Thanks. I've always been somebody who's been very interested in talking about sex, particularly sex and disability. So it's something that's come up very naturally with me and my friends to just have these discussions already. And we realized within my friends in the disability community that there really wasn't a lot of opportunity for these conversations to be had. And a lot of us were kind of having to figure things out on our own. So we're thinking about where the most impact could be in that. And the conversation was happening a lot that sex toys are made for very much normative bodies and for one type of body, and usually one type of sexual interaction that's very standard. So, yeah, we wanted to be a little more imaginative and creative with it and find other ways that we as people with disabilities could access pleasure and access our own bodies. So we came up with this project. I am working with the Tetra Society of Atlantic Canada, the Halifax chapter, as well as Venus Envy. And we came up with the idea to create a space where we can have these conversations as individuals with disabilities, really talk about what's missing, what our needs are. And then based off of that, each participant will have a device made for them. We'll come up with prototypes. We have volunteers through Tetra that are everything from engineers to crafters to just creative people who want to give their time and expertise. We're going to help build us these devices. Some will be adapted from something that is already a standard sex toy and just may not work for that person. And then others will be making completely from scratch for materials that were never designed to be sex toys. And hopefully we'll be able to come up with some really helpful tools that will be able to be used throughout the community, but also be able to share a lot of knowledge that we have and create a space where these conversations can really start.
I think it's so cool, this project, because I think a misconception about what accessibility looks like is often buttons on doors, ramps, handlebars in bathrooms. And while those things are all very important, there's a lot more that is required for people to have full accessibility. And I think what you said about pleasure is really important, because pleasure is a huge part of being of human existence. It's a right. Everybody deserves to experience pleasure. And I think that with sex toys and with like just even education, there isn't a lot of conversation around these topics because they are kind of taboo. So there was an article written about you, April, in the Halifax Examiner about this research project and about this partnership with Venus Envy and Tetra. And you talked about the education of sex for folks with disability. And I think it's really important to talk about, because I think all of us can agree that sex education is limited already in what they teach is very for one group of people that have a particular sexuality and like you said, a very specific type of intercourse. And there's not much conversation outside of that about all the different ways that sex can look. And so I'm just really fascinated in that as well. I come from a teaching background, so I never did have to teach the birds and the bees. I don't know how good I would have been at that. Sex education and like the curriculum around sex education has always been something that I've been really curious about. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, maybe what some of your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sex education, like you said, is lacking in Canada in general for everybody. And there's a lot of areas that just aren't really explored enough. I grew up in a French-Acadian Catholic region that the schools were very much still controlled by the church at the time. So sex education didn't really exist in the school that I went to, other than you don't have sex until you're married. I noticed that that was a really strange gap even early on as a teenager. And I actually went to the principal and said, I want to create a sex education curriculum. And basically created it from scratch and was told that no, that wasn't appropriate. It would encourage students to have sex. So I just kind of started doing it underground in my own high school. I started handing out what information I could find. I would go when condoms and pregnancy tests were on sale and buy them in bulk, and people just knew they could come to me to get them. So I was handing them out from my locker very early on. And it was just kind of this thing that they allowed to happen because I was a good student. But that was the only sex education in my high school. And then I moved into the disability world at 16, and started to find all these extra challenges to finding pleasure in my own body, especially a body that had a lot of pain at the time. And trying to find that balance of how do I enjoy myself and enjoy the pleasure my body can give me when it's balanced with pain. And I really had quite a struggle with that and couldn't really find anywhere to access information. When I did go to my healthcare professionals and ask about it, the response was always, well, there's more important things for you to be worried about right now, so don't worry about sex. And it was just brushed off as if it shouldn't be something I was thinking about anyway. So yeah, I really had to figure things out on my own. And I was really lucky really early on in my early 20s. I found a partner who was another wheelchair user who basically just wanted to explore with me. And we learned each other's bodies. We learned our own bodies. We did our own research. We had some amazing experiences learning about neural reprogramming and how to reprogram the nerves in one part of your body where there is more sensation to be able to orgasm that way rather than in a traditional sense. And we experimented with different sex toys and different textures and positions and all these different things. And it really allowed me to grow and develop this in my own sexuality, which was really exciting. But I realized that most people don't get that opportunity. So we want to find other ways to create these spaces that are safe and where we can have these questions, have these conversations and ask these questions. And not only about purely the safety of sexuality, but how do you have conversations, for example, as somebody with mobility challenges that may need help positioning? How do you have conversations with your caregiver who may have to position you or help clean your sex toys afterwards? How do you navigate those things around sexuality? So there's all these questions that there's nowhere for anybody to go and ask. And we want to be that place for our community because we really see the need.
Yeah. I think that's so, so important because I think that like so many people need to have sex for their mental health. Like if there's a huge benefit, health benefits to being able to have sex, and to enjoy that pleasure. And I think that a lot of the times sex isn't seen that way by medical professionals. It's not seen that way by, educational professionals. It's not seen that way by a lot of people. And I think that when folks try to make that a priority, especially with their healthcare providers and I think also especially with people, with women, it's also especially taboo. So I think that this project is so needed, because there's, and I'm so happy that you want to be that person for Halifax, for people who have questions or who just want to be able to have a safe space where they can come and have conversations around and maybe potentially learn things about other people's sexual knowledge and journey that they've discovered for themselves to sort of apply to their own lives. So I think that's really great. So the process of this research, you're working with folks with disability and they're coming to you with their own experiences, but also their own sort of questions and queries and what can we do? So how's that process going to look for people?
Yeah, so the process is still in development now very much. It came together just out of a desire of the four of us on the core team that founded it, wanting to create the space. And as we started planning, we developed the process. We've had applications already for folks with disabilities who want to participate. And within a short period of time, we were overwhelmed by the response and the variety of people who applied. from every background and every need, and everything from people who openly said that I don't know anything about sex, I don't know where to go to ask these questions, to people who are very open about their sex lives and already have everything figured out and just want to see where else they can go with it. So there was such a wide variety in applicants. We're in the process now of choosing our final core team to participate in the first phase because we do want to expand it later on to many phases. But we want to keep it small for this first phase so that we can learn and adapt as we go and really serve everybody who's in this first phase and make sure that their needs can be properly met. So yeah, we're choosing our team now. We're also going through the process of screening our volunteers and getting them all approved and getting criminal records checks and all these background things, and also giving them proper training so they feel comfortable interacting with individuals with disabilities from various backgrounds as well. And they feel comfortable with the language and feel that we're there to support them as well. So we're choosing both those contingents of applicants right now. And then we're going to have a few different ways of approaching it. A lot of it will be done in small group settings where we come together and just talk in a group about what our experiences have been and where the gaps have been that we've experienced. Some people have chosen that they'd prefer to meet one-on-one or with a couple of us as the leader team leaders and keep it more private. So we can accommodate that as well. And then based on all of that information, we'll see what the most pressing need is for each participant and try to build a device that will suit their needs. We'll create a prototype, have them test it, have them experiment with it. They can give us feedback. We can make changes and adapt it as we go. And we're definitely hoping to pull together a lot of resources that we find within the community as well to help have a space where people, even if they aren't participants in this space, can get information based on our conversations and just know where else they can look as well.
Mm-hmm. I know you're just starting out or just like in your beginning phases, but do you guys see this could you see this becoming more of an educational, like taking it through more of a media route or trying to get it into school somehow in the far future? Or is that not something you're thinking of right now?
Yeah, I don't know if we've really considered the school option just because there's a lot of red tape attached to that.
Exactly. And yeah.
Much have to fit into the mold again. But I think probably the approach that we're thinking right now as a team, which may change, is that we'd have an organization, whether that's a nonprofit that we form or some group of people that are just dedicated to doing this, that we could advertise in the community that anybody who wants to approach us can come and be a part of this and have a space where they can have conversation or see the prototypes that we've created in the past and learn how to adapt their own sex toys as well, if that's something they want to do, and just get the education and find community where they can have these conversations.
Right. I think these resources are really hard to find. So if you're on your own and you're searching and trying to find information about sex and your needs are different than what other people need, it's really hard to be able to find those things and to find, you know, it's, I think what is also challenging about this information is that there's a lot of misinformation outside on the internet. There's a lot of, it can be dangerous for people to go out and try and source this information for themselves or to try to experiment with this information, like, you know, getting some information, thinking that that's going to work for your body and then finding out, no, it didn't. Or trying to force things that don't, because you're trying to fit into this narrow scope of what sex information is accessible, you know? And so having a space that is safe and is there with the purpose of education, essentially taking your high school locker mm-hmm. and just making it exist for everyone. I think that that's great because, you know, being able to go somewhere and ask questions, being able to go and say, you know, even just, is my body different than everybody else's body? And is, you know, is there somebody out there who is interested in exploring my body with them? I think that's also, you know, something that is really needed.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I recognize that I had so much privilege in that I still had a lot of ability to research on my own and find the information. And, in a lot of ways, my body still was fairly normative at the early stages when I was exploring this. But there's so much information in some areas and so little in others. One thing I was shocked by when I started doing research was how much information there was for sexual education for males who had spinal cord injuries. But even then, it's very much how to get a boner. And that was all that they'd explore. I looked at one of the very thick books that one of my friends had been given at the rehabilitation center for adjusting to a spinal cord injury. And there were 20 some odd pages of information on sex for men. And there was a page and a half for women. And it was how to prevent a UTI. And how to prevent a pregnancy. And that was it. Nothing about pleasure, nothing about any of that. And that was still like from the approach of a heteronormative relationship. So when you bring all these other factors in, it gets really complicated really quickly. And then there's individuals on the non-binary scale and the trans scale and people who are just trying to figure out their sexuality as well. So you add all these layers in and it can become really difficult to find the information that you're trying to access. And then there's complications with people with limited mobility or dexterity in their hands. How do they hold some of these sex toys, even if they find a sex toy that's very effective for them? Are they able to hold it and actually use it? So there's all these different factors that come into play. One that I hadn't even really thought of until recently when I started doing research for this project is a lot of neurodivergent folks and the textures or the sensations of some of these products may be overstimulating to them. Lube is a problem for a lot of individuals, the texture of lube. It's to have all these conversations and have a safe place where we can explore these things. But also, like you said, explore the safety around sexuality. And not even just the pure sexual interaction part, but just even as a wheelchair user or somebody who's seen as having a visible disability, they can be seen as prey out in society. And you get some real strange interactions, speaking as a woman who's been in a wheelchair for her entire adult life, that I feel confident in being able to navigate most of the time. But a lot of people never are taught how to navigate those things. Even as somebody who's very good at advocating for themselves, I'm 35 years old now, and I've been offered or had it forced on me, 5 times in my life to be sterilized by the healthcare professionals because they didn't think I should be able to have children. The first time it happened, I was 6 years old, and this was told to my mother that they were going to do this to me. And luckily she stood up and fought for me. But the healthcare system has a lot of strange ableist approaches out there still. And there's not really a place that we can have these conversations as individuals with disabilities. Once you're looking for a partner, how do you navigate that? One thing I don't think we really consider, at least not before COVID, in the able-bodied world, is the importance of touch and touch starvation and touch hunger and what that does to a person mentally when you're not touched for months on end, other than in a medical sense. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of friends over the years that have just messaged me and been like, I really need somebody to cuddle with right now. I need to feel that connection. And that's something I've done with many of my friends over the years. But a lot of people are too nervous or afraid or don't have that person in their life they can approach and ask for that. So what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, I was, there was a film, and April, I think maybe you might have seen it, by a filmmaker called Ben Duffy called Take a Look at This Heart. Mm-hmm. And it explored different relationships with folks that have disability. And something that I learned about while watching that documentary that I'd never thought about or had even considered as a career was a sex surrogate, which mm-hmm. is someone whose job it is to work with folks who are trying to figure out what sex looks like for them. And especially if you're someone who's never had sex before, you're not even sure if you're able, what sex looks like for you, if you're able to do some of the things that you're curious about, because you've never had the opportunity to try. Mm-hmm. And a sex surrogate acts as a person who's comes in and can help work with you to explore different things and to try different things. And so that when you're open to having a relationship with another person, an intimate relationship with that person, that you have the confidence to say, I know what works for my body and what doesn't. Because that process of exploring, especially if you're, you know, if it's your first time, that's always challenging. And like you said, April, you're very privileged to have someone who is there willing to explore all the different facets of what sex can look like. But not everybody has that opportunity. And I think that was something that I was just so interested in as like what that career looks like and who would access those services. And it was really cool because in the documentary, the person who was sharing the fact that they had used that service for their first sexual experiences, the amount of confidence that that gave that person, because they knew that it wasn't going to be embarrassing. It wasn't going to be, they weren't going to feel rejected if something didn't work. They weren't going to feel they're probably going to feel vulnerable, but they weren't going to feel like they were being in an unsafe situation. And I think that that's something that a lot of able-bodied people take for granted. That I think finding someone to explore these opportunities with is challenging sometimes, you know, with online dating and everything. And, but if you add that, into someone trying to find, you know, their soulmate or just someone to mm-hmm. spend their life with, that's a whole other bunch of uncomfortableness that there's not enough information out there for people to be able to access, for people to even just, even in content for like adult content, if you're going to go watch pornography or something, like there's not, if you search for that stuff, I think that's also like problematic that there's not a lot of diversity there as well. And so that was just something that was really cool to me. So I'm fascinated with this idea of this hub, this place that could exist someday for folks mm-hmm. to be able to come in and say, this is something I want to explore with you. What does that look like?
That's such a great... what were you going to say, Trulie?
I was just going to say, it's really interesting that you say that, Kelsey, because it's like one of my first experiences in a conversation about sexuality and disability was actually in a broader conversation around the legality of sex work.
And I just would bring that up.
Yeah, it just kind of shows that like how able-bodied queer spaces are. But like the first time we actually, like I was in a group of people and sat down and had a conversation about that. And we were talking about like the morality and legality of sex workers and that aspect of like how important sex workers can be for people who have disabilities. Mm-hmm. And it's just an interesting thing to me that, you know, in a space where, you know, in queer spaces, and as someone who's been through like sexual health workshops as a youth and all that kind of stuff, I've been in a lot of conversations about sex. I've probably only been in one or two conversations about sexuality for people with disability. And there's like this sort of view around that like people who have disabilities are like, they're never viewed as sexual beings. Mm-hmm. And the fact that like, I don't know, it's always like a weird combination of people being like, people who I've known that have like, especially like physical disabilities are like, wait, can you have sex? You can have sex. Can you feel anything? Like, and like, it's always, so people always get like, how do you go to the bathroom and how do you have sex? Mm-hmm. And so like the fact that we just don't talk about this and then are like, almost like even in queer spaces that I'm in, like it's never considered, like when you're talking about like sexuality and representation, especially like in feminist queer spaces where you're talking about like empowerment and sexuality and being able to talk about it, we're always talking about able-bodied people for the most part. And like the representation, especially I find of like feminist, like women-centered movements of where it's like the empowered sexual woman is an empowered, normally thin-bodied and able-bodied woman. And often a white woman. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, it's an interest, like, I think another important aspect of like, beyond just helping people, I think a lot of the attention that this has gotten is people being like, oh yeah, I guess people who have disabilities do have sex.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. And I think that's why I've gotten so many reactions over the years when I do talk about my sexuality, is because people either don't expect I should want sex at all because of my disability, or I'm very much fetishized because of my disability. It's, ooh, that idea of the helpless woman in the wheelchair that we can take advantage of. And I very much will be open that that's not the case at all for me. I'm a very proud, polyamorous, pansexual woman who has multiple partners and, from all across the spectrum, and we'll talk about my sexuality and my sexual experiences very openly. And it shocks a lot of people. And I'm not doing it to shock people. I'm doing it because I know how many people are out there that need that information and need to see that there's somebody else out there who's been through it and found a way to unlock their own pleasure and their own sexuality. But it's a really rare thing to be able to be in a space and have these conversations, especially like you said, truly from an empowered feminist perspective. Yeah. And I mean, folks with disabilities too are already so creative in their day-to-day lives about solving problems. And a lot of them have already tried to find ways to adapt and to make devices of their own, or to try to find spaces where they can have these conversations. And like Kelsey said, they're not always safe spaces. But when you can open up and start sharing this information, people get really excited that they have an outlet for that now. And just being able to share the knowledge of, well, how do you do this? And how do you do that? And oh, well, you can use your chair in some really creative ways to have some really amazing sex. Just those kinds of things. It's really important information to share.
Seems like such a powerful, like, collective, just like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible what you're doing.
And it's an awesome team that we've brought together with, a lot of knowledge there already and a lot of expertise. And we have Rochelle from Venus Envy on board. So we have all the power and knowledge of Venus Envy behind us as well, which is already an amazing space to go into and get a lot of this information. We're just really bringing the community together behind it this time.
Yeah. So, that's good. Oh, all three of us. That never happens.
I'll let Truly go first.
Okay. I was going to be like, how do we do this? Do we rock, paper, scissors? So as someone who's like a sex educator in this sense, and, you know, people who may be, I don't know, working with, in spaces where there's a conversation about sexuality or sex safety, and, you know, whether they're an educator or teacher or even just a parent, how do you talk about, like what would you want people who are able-bodied, what resources or what, like, where should someone who is potentially an able-bodied person but wants to include sexuality and disability in the way that they teach or in the way that they talk to others, what would be your ideal information or inclusion look like from like an able-bodied person standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is just doing your own research as well, going into it and seeing what's happening in the disability world out there and what kind of research has already been done. One great resource out there right now is Drew Gerza. And Handy is they're the first adaptive sex toy company that is actually made by a person with a disability as well. So they've got some great resources and creating some really great things. They're based out of Toronto, but some amazing knowledge that they can share. Also, Drew's created the Disability After Dark podcast, which is totally about sex and disability. So that's a really important and awesome resource. Locally here, Venus Envy has a lot of knowledge, a lot of great books that they can share and can point you in the direction of other resources. And depending on who you're working with, what group you're working with, a lot of these groups are starting to create sexual health resources for their individual communities. I know Autism Nova Scotia has been doing a lot of work on that recently and have been really upping their game on the sexual education side of things and have some amazing resources there. So it's out there. You just have to do a little bit of searching for it. Just do some research really, but those are a few great groups that locally and within Canada anyway, that are, they're doing some amazing research right now.
Yeah. I'm really interested to check those out. Thank you for sharing.
I think too, with sex is that, everybody has different tastes. Mm-hmm. like even, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a friend group that's open about sex and talks mm-hmm. about sex often, I do happen to have one, you know, even just amongst friends talking, you know, someone will say, oh, I was really enjoying this. And I'd be like, no, thank you. That sounds awful to me.
Having conversations about sex with my straight roommates, but
honestly.
And so to me, I think that what I urge people to do around sex and accessibility is to stop gatekeeping these conversations about who's allowed to have sex, what sex looks like, because sex, you know, like a lot of people are like, sex is penetration, and that's not always the case for everyone. Sorry if I can't, if that was really aggressive. Sex is about penetration. But for a lot of folks, it's
you
not.
Think that's crass.
but for a lot of folks, it's not that. And I think that opening up that conversation and allowing space for people to share, you know, what feels good for them, and not, you know, kink shaming or just making everybody comfortable and feeling safe to have conversations around what is pleasurable for them and their bodies. Even though I did just kind of kink shame earlier when I was like, ooh, but mostly I think for, you know, the point that you touched on for neurodivergent people and sensory overload, for me, that's a challenge. For me, sex is very, if there's a lot going on, there's all kinds of feelings, sensations, stuff, items. And for me, you know, I can get overwhelmed really quickly, or I can get oversensitized and then I'm done. I want to quit. And for some folks, that's challenging because they're not always in tune with what's going on with me. And so being able to have those safe conversations and being able to just normalize conversations around sex. Hi, this is what my body needs to orgasm. This is what we need to do. Are we going to do those things? If you want to have sex with me, yes, you will. and being okay with that, I think being empowered, I think everybody should be empowered in the bedroom to get what it is that they're looking for, to have pleasure and to be able to give and offer what they're comfortable doing and creating spaces where those conversations can happen, where people can access resources and accessible sex toys that they can add into their pleasure routine and into their bedroom. I think it's really awesome. So I think it's so cool. I can't wait to see where this project goes. I can't wait to see what other research comes out, how it grows and changes. And I kind of want you to call it like April's Locker or something.
Oh my gosh. I'm super excited for, you know, I don't know if this, like, I don't know if you've noticed this, Emma, but like, I noticed around like my age group and folks who are younger than me.
Rude. People are young too.
Healthy. Call out. But like, I don't know, we got lost somewhere with the idea of empowerment in a sense of like that sexual empowerment then I've noticed has turned into, oh, this sort of specific idea of what sex looks like. And it's no longer, you know, necessarily like the purity ideal, but there is still these ideals of like, you know, maybe potentially like more aggressive or more like you have to enjoy sex in a certain way to be empowered. And
definitely,
I really hope that in having these conversations about how to empower people with disabilities, that also comes, you know, the idea of empowerment and pleasure and sexuality isn't just about the performance of it. It's about doing mm-hmm. what makes you feel safe and what makes you feel happy. And if that looks different, or if that looks softer, or if that looks safer than what other people might think is like sexy and out there, and you know, they're what our idea of like a person who's in sexually empowered is. And I think that's like not only something that's super beneficial for people with disabilities who have to adjust how they have sex, but also for like people in general, and especially I think a younger generation that's growing up with sexual empowerment, but also like the very specific idea of what sexual empowerment is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And touching on that too, I think that, yeah, like you said, just leaving the possibilities open in so many different ways. Accepting and welcoming the asexual community as well, because they have just as much right to their sexuality as I do as a polyamorous person. To welcome all of these different approaches, and also to be okay when the expectations are going to change from day to day and moment mm-hmm. to moment. That's one thing I struggle with a lot is depending on my pain levels and my mobility and my energy and 100 other factors of what's going on in my life each day, my body's going to react very differently. And I have to have that conversation every time with every partner to let them know that it's okay if that thing that I really enjoyed yesterday is not working at all for me today. And can we just shift and try something different? Or my body may be loving something, and then all of a sudden it's like, nope, don't do that. Stay away from there. It's going to shift a lot. And to be able to be open about having that conversation and not taking it personally. And even if you attempt something and it doesn't work the way you intended it to, or you set a goal and you didn't make it to that goal, that's okay. You're taking steps in the right direction, and that's just as important. You may not be ready to even think about having a partner involved. You may not be ready to masturbate yet. Your goal may be, I just am going to look at my body today, and that's all I can handle. And that's still an important part of this. And just to let people know that wherever they are, it's okay to explore this. And it's okay if you don't reach the goal that you wanted to reach. It's a journey, and you're moving in that direction.
And I think
that's all really, sorry, you go.
No, you go, Emma.
I was just going to say it really resonated with me as someone with an eating disorder. It's not the exact same, but very similar. And just, you know, our bodies don't experience touch in the same way, don't experience, especially before in recovery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those conversations are all very similar to conversations I've had to learn to navigate my whole life, my whole sexual life anyway. So yeah, I really relieved that. Also, I have just been like somewhat in another world thinking about how uncomfortable the texture of lube is to me ever since you mentioned it. I'm like, oh, she's right. Like, I can't handle it. I'm like thinking about it on my hand and just like, like there's no lube in this room right now, Emma. Don't worry.
You're okay.
I'm okay, but the lube can't find you.
there's so many different factors like that too. And people don't necessarily consider.
I'm just like wiping my hands off of the chair every few minutes. I'm like, it's okay.
On a really random funny side note, I had lube ruined for me in high school because we had a sex educator come in who basically taught us how to use calving lube for sex because apparently it's safe. And they're like, you can buy this tub at the UFA, United Farmers Association. And I was just like, no,
it's what type of lube?
It's essentially, it's like this powder lube that you make for delivering baby cows.
Can you use that? Wait, it's powdered?
Yeah, it's powdered and you turn it into a gel and apparently it's safe. Oh. And you can buy it for really cheap in these giant tubs. But every time I think about it now, I'm scarred. That is the most Albertan thing I've ever said.
It is. Very Albertan.
It is.
Oh, Lord.
I just want other people to suffer with me.
You can
this
use
is pretty
it.
Gay, but
you.
Should you?
Did the person have like a really big belt buckle when they told you?
And a hat.
They had their hat on, their big
belt anytime buckle, I see the cowboy emoji now, I'm just going to think of that.
And the best one was like, they were like, I think it's like $12.99 at the United Farmers Association. I'm like, no, no.
That was your sex ed in Alberta.
This person has a brand deal. Well, I love that. That is the funniest thing I've ever.
I mean, also, I think it's really important to remember how hilarious sex can be and how hilarious our bodies can be. And we have to be able to laugh about this too. Like, one of the strangest experiences I ever had is with a partner, and we were kind of like laying in the afterglow after the fact, and both of us were wheelchair users. So just laying there, they happened to be a lot taller than me, like over 6 feet tall, and I'm 5'1". And we both happened to spasm at the same time, which brought their knee right into my eye.
No.
The next 2 weeks, I had a giant black eye, and everybody's asking me, "Oh, what happened?"
And you're like, "I walked into a doorknob."
Wow. Yeah, sex is so funny. There's so many different things that can happen, and I think these conversations, this research, all of this stuff, it's not just. It opens it up for everyone, because the more comfortable that everyone becomes having these conversations, laughing at what happened sometimes, the unfortunate circumstances that happen, I think it's better for everybody because it makes sex more accessible for everyone. These conversations are so hard to have in schools, and they're so hard to have, you know, with your parents. They're so hard to have, but the more we talk about it, the more we normalize the conversations, and the more we welcome everyone to the conversation and allow for everyone to share what their experiences are, what they look like. If that's using calf lube, then you know what? Party to you. And you know, maybe that is it. Maybe that person was just coming and sharing really valuable information, and we laughed at them, but we
that person was coming.
We've never tried it, so maybe we should, and maybe it'll rock our worlds. We'll be so surprised. Whoa, this is it.
We'll be like, holy cow!
Holy.
I'm just so excited for the teaser to this episode to be calf lube. Holy cow.
Yeah. That's the name of the episode. Holy cow.
Holy cow. Blake. Blake.
Blake, do your thing.
Do your thing. Well, it seems like this is a really good place for us to wrap up our conversation while we're giggling. I am so thankful, April, for you coming here and sharing this cool project to let people know what's going on. And by the time this episode comes out, you might be much farther along in this process. So there'll be a lot more information to learn for folks who are listening or watching our podcast. I would like to thank Truly and Emma for joining me with this conversation with April.
Thank you for joining, Kelsey. Well, thank you for joining. Yeah,
thanks. Thanks. I just had a great time today, so I'm really grateful. Thanks so much,
everyone. Too. Yeah, it was awesome.
Thank you. All right, and so that's a wrap on this episode, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
I'm gonna head.
The global outbreak of COVID-19 has affected all our lives in various ways, and it has notably drawn our attention to the intensified systemic racism and selective xenophobia towards our racialized friends in our Canadian society. It is understandable for each of us to feel anxious about this fatal disease. However, the sentiment of fear does not give us the right or the opportunity to conduct hate crime and to discriminate against our Asians, Blacks, Indigenous, and other racialized friends. It is not okay to associate the COVID-19 disease with Asians, particularly those of Chinese descent. It is not okay to conduct physical and psychological abuses towards racialized individuals. It is not okay to vandalize Asians and other marginalized owned businesses. We must stop normalizing and stop accepting racist conducts and hate speeches towards all racialized communities. Rather, in these unprecedented times of global pandemic, together, we must educate ourselves and others and be eager to understand race, systemic racism, and racial justice in Canada and elsewhere. Remember, whoever, wherever, and whenever we are humankind. We must learn to stand together as citizens of the world for a healthier, safer, and happier community.
Level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 9:30 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to Episode 9 of the Disability is Art podcast. That completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational, inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you'd like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalanche@ckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041 extension 6788 or email news@ckut.ca. Stage Bin for her say that's up next.
What made you drop out?
Well, a lot of people think it was the 400 acid trips I took, you know.
Uh-huh, but what was it really, Bob?
One day I played CKUT in 90.3.
Then what happened?
I saw God.
You I've saw God. That. Well, that sounds like true enlightenment to me,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, we grabbed.
And on the seventh day, the Lord said,
let there be a CKUT.
Feeling off? Need to stimulate your imagination? From May 28th to June 6th, join the 15th edition of the Off-TA, a key festival for young creation in live art. By phone or online, dozens of shows, micro-performances, and live broadcast activities are offered to you from all over the city. Come celebrate and support bold artists who create in these uncertain times. Get your accessible or supporter passes now to access the entire program. To learn more about this edition, visit offta.com.
Vous vous sentez off et avez besoin de faire le plein d'imaginaire? Du 28 mai au 6 juin, prenez part à la 15e édition du Off-TA, festival incontournable de la jeune création en art vivant. Par téléphone ou sur le web, des spectacles, des micro-performances et des activités en direct vous sont offerts des quatre coins de la ville. Venez célébrer et soutenir des artistes qui osent créer en ces temps d'incertitude. Procurez-vous dès maintenant nos passes accessibles ou solidaires pour accéder à l'ensemble de la programmation. Pour en savoir plus sur cette édition à distance, consultez le offta.com.